In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred with you in Little Steven's Underground Garage, and it's time for another Coolest Conversations podcast presented by Hard Rock. Please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. Joining me for this episode is UK guitarist Ginger Wildheart. He's best known in his native land as a frontman for the Wildhearts, who've had a number of hit singles and albums over there since the 1990s. His latest single, though, Wasted Times, has him teamed with the Sinners. It's out on Wicked Cool Records and a recent Coolest Song of the World. We hear some of it now, followed by our chat on your Coolest Conversations podcast presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage. I'm the Mighty Manfred, here with you in Little Steven's Underground Garage, and it's time for today's Coolest Conversations. My guest is English singer, songwriter, and guitarist Ginger Wildheart. How are you, Ginger?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
Oh, fantastic. That's excellent. Well, I'm doing pretty good, and I'm very excited to get a chance to chat some with you. And I was wondering, so, you know, the last couple of years have been pretty crazy. What's your pandemic story for the last couple of years?
Well, I didn't get it for the longest time. Everybody I knew, my family and everyone have all got it. I started feeling really ropey about a week ago, and I spent a couple of days in bed and then started feeling better. So I came to visit my family, took a test and showed up positive. So all the time I'd been sick, I was negative. Then I showed up positive. And since I've been showing up positive the last 5-6 days, I've felt fantastic, to be honest. So my story typically is a little bit different than everybody else's.
But you're healthy now.
Yeah. Well, I've just started testing negative yesterday.
Good.
So I'm finally out of it. But to be honest, it's been one of the nicest weeks I've ever had. I've done nothing. Just stayed in the house and watched movies. Fantastic.
Well, not having had it, you know, up until that point, did you start feeling a little cocky, like people going, oh, yeah, I've got it, that, and you're like, yeah, you know, I never had it. I just never had it.
I did. I started inventing those ridiculous theories, like, because me and my sister and my mom have never had it. So I thought, oh, but some people are just immune to it, naturally immune, like my family. And of course, it's absolute rubbish. And that's the same as everybody else.
Well, the way we first became aware of you here in the Underground Garage, and I know you've had a lot of success there in the UK, but the first way that we became aware of you here was when you did that single with Ryan Hamilton. And we call it F U Brain. And you guys did that for suicide prevention at Christmas several years ago. Is that charity still active, Samaritans.org?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, online, the Samaritans are great, but the Samaritans have been great ever since I've been around, you know. But since the 60s, I think the Samaritans have been the most... the most appreciated, but least invested in. I mean, I've done a lot of work with the Samaritans, and they're always broke. They're always looking for investors. So whatever I can ever do, I'll do. But, you know, it's not like they're getting any money from the government or anything like that. So they're just, they're angels, the Samaritans. And it's the last person you talk to before you do something really stupid. And in Britain, you know, at the edge of every cliff, at the, you know, anywhere where there's a big tree that looks like it can hold your weight, there's a Samaritan sticker everywhere, you know. So it's obviously a big thing, still an ongoing thing, still the suicide rates are rising every year. And there, you know, there isn't a lot of attention being put into research, even after all this time. We're still in the Victorian ages as far as mental health is concerned. So we just got to thank these angels like the Samaritans and people like that and do what we can.
We know Ryan has talked a lot about his ongoing struggles with depression. How are you doing?
I'm great. I'm great. The thing is, with something like depression, the experts are the people that suffer from depression. So having it gives you an insight into how someone else copes. That's why I share a lot of things on Twitter and, you know, get a little bit of flack for it. You know, you don't have to be so open. I'm like, look, I'm doing this for myself as well. I like to talk to the experts, and they're the guys on the street. I'm doing great because I'm learning more about this every year. And, you know, I consider myself a really lucky person. Like, in general, I'm blessed. My life is absolutely blessed with joy and great fortune, you know, the mental health issues notwithstanding. So, yeah, every day above ground is a great day, and I'm learning more and more about this all the time. You know, it's a... Every day is one day at a time, and you just got to make it to bedtime. So, you know, it's, as far as I'm concerned, like, everybody's carrying something around. Everyone's dealing with something that you don't know. Sure. I'm just one of them.
Well, you've been in a number of bands and music projects over the course of your career, including the Choir Boys, the Throbs, and of course, the Wild Hearts. But when did you start playing guitar?
I started playing guitar about 1979, 1980, just messing about. I was a Ramones fan, and I was into AC/DC, so you could always find songs you could play. But I never wanted to be a singer, so I spent so many years developing my skills as a songwriter, looking for a singer. And now I realize that if I hadn't started singing, my songs would have the wrong inflections and the wrong voice anyway, because I can't imagine anyone else singing my stuff, especially with this accent. But I still got a career. I'm 57 and I'm still doing great. And it's because I don't approach things typically like a cliched singer, because I never really wanted to be one. So it wasn't until I was 29 I started singing. You know, singers, when they do that sort of, you know, getting into the first, in front of the first audience at about 15 years old or something, I was nearly 30 when I got into my first audience singing. And everyone was just like, I'm not sure you're going to be able to do this. And I kept at it and kept at it. And sure enough, I got good at it. And now... it looks like I've got a job for life. So, yay, bad luck.
Well, right there, you know, if you're the singer and you're the guitar player, you know, you're covering two positions there. So, you know, that helps keep the chaos down. Just you know, more players, more exponential chaos.
I'm doing is a result of things kind of going wrong and me feeling, you know, oh, why me? Why can't I find a singer? Why do I have to sing? Why can't I get a record deal? Why do I have to do my own label? You know, I can't get it. Drummers are so unreliable. Why do I have to learn to play the drums? But the thing is, now I'm in charge of my own little empire, and I can play everything, write and sing and design the record covers of my albums, put them out on my own label. And I have an audience who buy them and feed my little boy and pay for us to have a roof. So, you know, things not going right in your life is usually a good thing.
Well, was there any, you talk about just now, you know, having your own little empire, and over time, you know, learning to sing, playing a little bit of drums, designing your own records, having your own label. Early on, you pick up guitar when you're hearing the Ramones and as AC/DC. Was there any sort of epiphany when you were younger, any type of moment where it dawned on you that, you know, I need to rock? I mean, was there any one moment or not? Or was it just sort of developed?
No. I mean, I like music. I loved music. And mainly when I was a kid, I liked country music. There was always a lot of country on the radio when I was a kid. And I always loved the harmonies, and I still pick them. Country. I still favor country harmonies, close harmonies and internal rhyming and stuff. But the first time I saw a band called Sweet on Top of the Pops, and it was the first moment where my parents both turned around and went, "This is absolute trash, turn it off." And I was like, no, this is good. And I was standing for something. And it was by the end of this song, I'm sure it was Blockbuster by The Sweet. I knew what I wanted to do. I liked music already, but I knew that this was going to be something. I don't even know how I can tell this story on the radio, but he had a sticker of an inverted smiley face, and the camera panned into this, the camera zoomed into this sticker and had S-H-I-T written on the bottom. And it was a swear word at 7 o'clock in my living room. And I just thought, you can make a noise and you can cause trouble, and you can be on the TV. And I thought, that's a job I could do. And I've been doing the same ever since. And incidentally, I'm still ripping off that Sweet blueprint of, like, you know, the great guitar riff, tick, great chorus, tick, you know, cool verse, tick. That's still how I write songs. So my gateway band is still still a major influence.
Very cool. Now, you mentioned your parents trying to turn it off. Were they supportive of your music, or what was your home life like with that?
No, where I come from, you don't play music for a living. You know, you play music as a kind of a hobby that people don't tend to talk about too much. People work in factories. There was a lot of factory work when I was a kid. And I just wanted to stay in music. And my parents were really, really against me doing it. So it was a battle the whole time. My biggest critics were my parents from the off. I remember sitting in the room with the program that I'd seen The Sweet on, right? Top of the Pops.
Right.
Now, I've gone home to visit my parents. And, you know, at the time I was drinking a lot and things were really busy. And I forgot all about recording Top of the Pops earlier that week. And we came on Top of the Pops. This was something that happened a lot. But we came on Top of the Pops as my parents were in the room. And instead of them going like, "Oh, you've made it, well done, son," they were saying things like, "You're not much of a singer, are you? You're not much of a front man. I think you should get a front man in your band." That was the kind of support that I had. And it was like a boy named Sue. It just taught me to be tough and to, you know, I never really saw much in the way of criticism in magazines, in reviews and stuff, compared to my parents.
Right, yeah. Well, I share that a little bit. My mother was German, and it was always the same sort of stuff. In fact, as far as music wise, and also regarding the stuff on the air, she had Sirius, like, on her television through the cable TV, and the upper channels, the higher channels were just like radio channels, Sirius channels, and she would tune in and listen, and then when I would speak to her later on, she would say things like, "I don't understand why you are talking. You're always talking too fast. Do you know you talk too fast? No one can understand what you're saying." You know, it's just always, you know. But it was, and you're right, it was this sort of weird, tough love, this unintended tough love, you know.
Yeah, geographical. I mean, it wasn't like my parents are trying to be mean, or your
right.
parents.
That's what I'm saying. I agree. Yeah, no.
Generation.
She thought she was being very constructive.
Yeah, and it was all there. Make sure you get a job to fall back on. And I'm like, I'm not going to fail. I don't need to fall back on anything. And you know what? I never did find another job, so I couldn't have done anything anyway. So this is basically all I've done. And, you know, like Woody Allen said, you know, what was it, 70% of success is just turning up. I think, personally, success is just not giving up. You know, especially when, you know, there's been times where people would have liked me to give up. Yeah. And I couldn't give up because I had more songs in my head. I had to go and record them to get them out of my system, to exercise them from myself, so I get some sleep and write some new ones. So it was a constant process of creativity. I wasn't ever trying to succeed. It was just something that I felt, this is what I do. If I'd made chairs for a living and I didn't sell any chairs, I'd still make chairs. And music was definitely that. And when I was a little kid, school was a long way away, and I used to have to walk there, you know, almost an hour there and an hour back. So I'd think of an album, I'd make up an album and invent the cover and on the way there. And then I think of another one on the way back. And I did this every single day. So I was kind of, my ideal job was exactly what I'm doing now, which doesn't exist. There's not a record company in the world would let me release three albums a year. So I kind of devised this dream job of mine purely because I wouldn't quit. And a lot of my friends quit. And I guess that's why... that's why nothing happened. They got the answer as soon as they said, I'm not doing this anymore. But, you know, I never know what the answer is. And I'm still convinced that next year is going to be better than this year.
Well, and, amen. And we're going to talk. So you mentioned, you know, new songs and having songs in your head. Let's talk some about this new single. It's called Wasted Times.
Yeah.
Out on Wicked Cool Records. It's our current coolest song in the world. On it, you're backed by the Sinners. So who are the Sinners?
The Sinners is it was a band called the Stone Mountain Sinners, and I wanted to put a band together that, you know, played this sort of music really well. And I was looking around for groups, and I envisaged like Bob Dylan finding the band. I didn't think it was going to be obviously like that, but my little version of it. And someone gave me a CD of this Stone Mountain Sinners, and I played it, and I'm like, whoa. Which part of America are these from? And they're like, they're from Birmingham. And I was like, get them on the phone. And I just said, come on, let's get down to the studio. I don't want to rehearse. I don't want to get together. I don't want to be disappointed if it doesn't work. Let's just get together and make some music. And, it, you know, this the chances of it sounding as good as it did are rare, you know. And it turned out great. And it, not only that, but me and the guitar player, Neil, who is a guy called Neil Iverson, who makes guitars, and his guitars are now going from strength to strength. He's selling tons of them. And but me and him play, and we've always been looking for that kind of Ron Wood to our Keith Richards, the guitar weaving thing. And we've never found it. You just get two guys that do 12 bar. We do that naturally. We do this weaving thing that we're both kind of, when we're listening, is that you or is that me? Which one is that? That's really rare for a guitar player to not even know if that's him playing. So I got really, really lucky with these guys.
Well, tell me some about the tune, Wasted Times. When and where did you record the song?
That was all done in this session that I told you about, where we had no rehearsal, just got down the studio, got in a circle, plugged in and recorded everything live. That's the only way that we wanted to do it. The song was just one of the many songs I had lying around. It was just, you know, about that kind of that relationship with that girl who, even though it didn't work out, you're still fond of each other and the door's always open should they want to come back in for a drink. And it's not all about getting wasted. You know, wasted times can also be just watching TV and not really doing much, but it's never wasting times. You know, it's still valuable, that connection. And, you know, every now and again, we meet people that are like that, you know, these people are going to stay in your life, maybe just not in the format that you thought they might, but their energy will always be there. It's fondness for someone that, you know, you ain't having sex with anymore.
Well, who's your favorite buddy to waste time with?
My partner, without a doubt, Jane, who runs the label, who sorts me out and manages my life, ties my shoelaces, combs my hair. Obviously, that's not true. I've got dreadlocks, but she's great. We were always drinking buddies before we were together. And it's one of those, you know, wherever I am, whenever I've got a problem, she's the first person that I think of. And whenever I've got something to celebrate, she's the first person that I think of. And if you find one of them, then you keep a hold of them.
So as your manager, you give her a good commission, I hope.
Everything, 100%. Yeah. But the way I figured it, I've had an amazing run of bad managers, same as most musicians. And I figured, how am I going to find a manager that's never going to rip me off? Well, it's my missus. She's not going to rip me off because the money's for her. It's for the family. Perfect, dude.
So I love a great turn of phrase. And like last week, I was talking to this guy, Greg Cartwright. He has this band called The Raining Sound. And he had the lyric in a song, just tell me what you need and baby, I'll listen. If you don't know what you want, then you don't know what you're missing. And I thought, it's just right. Sank Ray, right? And here you've got this cool turn of phrase about wasted times. How do you say it? Is it wasted times, never wasting time with you?
It goes over twice. The first chorus is wasted times are never wasting times. And then wasting time is never wasted times with you. Being a country fan, I love those turn of phrases. I've been lucky enough to write with people like Dan Baird, who is amazing at these turns of phrases. But one of my favourite ones that you just got me thinking of was a band called The Rainmakers. Do you remember them? Yeah, they had a song called Let My People Go Go. but there was a song called Drinking on the Job, and the line is, give a man free food and he'll figure out a way to steal more than he can eat because he doesn't have to pay. And I just thought, right, that is such a great, you know, summation of opportunist kind of hustlers that don't really work on any skill. They just work on the gullibility of other people. Turns of phrases. They're the only thing in lyrics that no one's done is your personality in those lyrics. And that's
right.
That's why I think lyric writing is, I never understand people who run out of things to write. I think if you're a fan of music, the inspiration comes from everywhere. And I'm obsessed with music. When I'm not listening to it, I'm writing it, and vice versa. And I'm always getting input. And it's, you know, it's a constant source of medicinal properties as well as you know, spiritual. But I don't understand how people get writer's block. I mean, you're just not listening to enough music and you're not getting out there and being inspired by the world.
Well, for like this song, for Wasted Times, did the lyrics come first, the music come first, or how does that, how does that compare with your usual songwriting process?
With the Sinner sort of stuff, it all comes in one go. It's a nice turn of phrase is usually the turning point, the key to the whole thing.
Right.
That can come straight away, or you can have a nice melody and just not a good enough, strong enough phrase, so the melody kind of percolates for a while. Mm-hmm. That was one of those, I don't mean to be rude, but I wrote it when I was sitting on the toilet.
Yeah.
And it was just one of those kind of, it's just the words kept coming out, and I kept thinking of Steve Earle, you know, how, you know, he has such a natural way with lyrics. It sounds like he's reading something that was written thousands of years ago. I've always been a fan of Steve Earle. And so if I get some lyrics and they're ticking a few boxes and I'm going, that's quite Steve Earle, that one, then that's good enough for me. That's good enough for me.
So this new single, it's part of an album. You recorded an album's worth of material with the Sinners?
Well, we've recorded two albums now. I was still right. This was going to be released, this album, when lockdown hit. Yeah. And I was writing the second album. So when lockdown kind of got a little bit more lenient, we went to the same studio and recorded a second album. Mm-hmm. Just because we're the sort of band that needs to play, you know.
Right.
And there wasn't any gigs to be done. So we thought, well, we might as well go and record another album. And then we can stay on the road when we finally do get back to playing gigs. But it's writing with something like this, because it's music that I've loved ever since I was a little kid, you kind of know when you've got something worthwhile, and you know when something's just, whatever. You know, it's kind of the standards have already been set as far as rock and roll and country and, you know, bands like that. So you know when something's good, really. It's like, what can I hear the Little Feet playing this? Can I hear Levon Helm doing drums on this? And then you go, yeah. And you go, there you go, it's finished. Next. All right.
So you mentioned you have two albums worth. This single is out now on Wicked Cool. Mm-hmm. Will the album come out on Wicked Cool Records as well?
Absolutely. All right. Because, you know, I'm a huge fan. Don't tell him, but I'm a huge fan of Little Stevens. Not just the stuff that he's done with Bruce Springsteen either, but I was always, when me and Ryan first did something and he was interested, I always just thought, oh, Ryan, you're so lucky to do that. I never thought for a second that I would be working with little Stephen as well. So it's, again, one of those, there's no such thing as good luck. There's just, you know, life does it, has its own timing, and you just got to sit around and wait for the, make sure that you get the punchline. It's impossible for me to stop. So as long as things are keeping going, there's something to look forward to. I'm occupied. I'm set and I'm ready to go. And I've been like this my whole life. I've never really looked at this as a way of making money. I only ever started making money really when I had something I needed to make money for, like when I became a father. Yeah. And I just thought, things are just going to look after themselves because I want money for the right reasons. Hey, presto, money started coming in. And same with music, because I'm not trying to be opportunist or a capitalist with it. I'm writing it purely from the love of it. I don't run out of music. It's almost like, you know, it's there for me to enjoy. I love it. I love being a musician, and I love looking forward to things at my age, still looking forward to things. I know people half my age who are already jaded and bored.
What are we going to do with those children? I tell you, you know, all you can do is show the way, brother. All you can do is show the way.
Maybe they'll all make better managers than the ones that we had.
Well, let me ask you this. So there are two albums with the Sinners, and we know one is going to be coming out sometime in the future on Wicked Cool. And they've also reissued your 2019 album, The Pessimist Companion. Why did, out of all your catalog, why did they reissue that one?
It was an album that we didn't really get. Because I write a lot of stuff and I have a lot of different projects, if one of them hits, like the Wild Arts do well and get in the charts, album charts or whatever, it kind of obliterates everything else. And, when the first Wild Arts album, after a while, came out, it kind of, The Pessimist Companion got overlooked. But it's an album that meant a lot to me. It was written at a time where I really thought that, the music was strong coming out of me. I'd like to see that released someday, you know. And when they said they were going to release the Sinners album, I was like, well, do you want to just release this one? It's a great record. It never really came out. And it might help, you know, build my name a little bit before the Sinners album. Mm-hmm. And they said yes. Now, in England, you don't get a lot of proactive people working in the music industry, you know. And so for a record company to go like, yeah, we'll release it, you know. There's a backlog on vinyl. Is it okay if we just release it on CD? Yeah, fine. And then they did. And that was a great kind of first experience with Wicked Cool. And then the second was seeing the CD and that cool logo that they've got, like the kind of New York skyline with just looks like a great pizza company or something. You know? The whole thing, I love Wicked Cool. I love what they do. They work with a lot of friends of mine. And I just love the passion for music. It really is inspirational, you know. And in Britain, they can be a little bit sardonic, a little bit jaded, with music. It's especially when you get to a certain age. And I like that in the States, and what I've seen with Wicked Cool, there's no ageism. It's like, is the song any good? Are the lyrics good? Is it a good tune? You know, I don't care how many people wrote it. I don't care how the guy's cheekbones are. Is it good? And that's the blueprint I've always used for music anyway.
Well, the track we want to take a listen to off The Pessimist Companion is You Will Let Me Down Again. Now, who is singing backing vocals on it? Because it seems like she's singing on nearly every cut on the album, isn't she? Who is that?
Yeah, that's a girl called Emily. It's the ex-girlfriend of my producer, Dave Draper. Okay. And she's lovely. They're very good friends of mine, still both very good friends with each other. And she just got one of those voices that we did something. I think FU Brain was the first thing that we done. And she just sounded lovely, but she was great at clinging on to the styling of the singer, of the mm-hmm. lead singer. She wasn't just trying to showboat for herself, which is very rare, as you know. And it just, people just kept saying, "But what a lovely sound your voices are." And I couldn't argue. So I've had her singing on a lot of stuff. And she writes songs herself as well. And she's starting to do really well. And she's a lovely girl, beautiful voice, great energy, great spirit.
Absolutely. So on You Will Let Me Down
Emily again. Ewing, I didn't say her surname. If you like the lyrics on the vocals, the female vocals on this, her name is Emily Ewing, and you can get her on Twitter.
Emily Ewing on Twitter. Yeah. And let's see, You Will Let Me Down Again. You are, the way I interpret it, is that you're singing about yourself or an alter ego. Is that in the ballpark of what you're intending?
Yeah, well, it's a song about depression, and within, you know, we haven't got enough time to talk about depression. It's a big one. But within that depression, there's a lot of stages, and mania being the first one, where you get this, you know, huge grand feeling, you know, the overconfidence and wanting to do ridiculous things. And it's almost like it can't be trusted. It's all, you know, it's the feeling of, it's a bit like My Old Friend, The Blues by Steve Earle, where the blues is like an old friend coming to visit. It's that kind of a concept. You're not going to get rid of this thing. It's always going to come back. And it's always going to come back smiling with a nice suit on.
Well, I'm hoping that by writing and recording a song like that, you receive some type of, cathartic release? Do you, or if you are having a particularly low moment, can you draw on those songs off the Pessimist Companion to sort of help you get through that? Or was that only useful for that particular moment, and going forward you have to find a different song to sing?
Oh, definitely that one. My guitar, sometimes it can sit in the corner for weeks. Sometimes I won't leave it alone. Every now and again, you're walking past, making a cup of tea or something, and the guitar goes, incoming, and you're going to pick it up. And there's a song in there, you know. And to be able to write your feelings, especially when you're at a low point, and the medication isn't helping, and the experts aren't helping, and the so-called experts, I mean the medical profession, you pick up a guitar and you can get this out of yourself somehow and make yourself feel better, or at least make yourself feel constructive.
Yeah.
And it's something that I've always cherished and been really grateful for. So there's that catharsis there. But then when the song goes out to people and someone gets back in touch and say that song really helped me get through something, and you're like, whoa, this is big now. This is not a hobby. This is a service. Then it feels really cathartic, because then the problems that I've got are actually solutions, and you can't just be down on yourself, and you can't just, you know, you can't just get that word again. You can't just get jaded, because this is an ongoing thing. People are suffering from mental health problems, from depression, and having somewhere to go, someone to speak to. I'm very open. People can get in touch with me, and then for the person to release music, and the lyrics talk to you. So like Dolly Parton said, you know, if you're in a good mood, you hear the music, and if you're in a not so good mood, you hear the lyrics. And a lot of the people that listen to my music have problems with the same kind of issues that I do. And to know that the song that you wrote to get you through your period is getting them through their down period, that's mind-blowing. I mean, that's a big thing.
Well, I really love how you refer to that as providing solutions. I think that's a really cool way to look at the, you know, the effect of your song on someone else, you know, the helpfulness it can provide.
Oh my God. And you know, to know that this, it's a common thing, you know, someone with depression, it doesn't care what color you are, how rich you are. It really doesn't discriminate in any way. And to find out even now that there's artists that I love who've always suffered from this, or people, whether I saw a Sheryl Crow documentary, I had no idea that she suffered from this. I'm hearing more and more about how much Winston Churchill suffered from this. You know, it's it's ongoing. It's great to be part of any kind of solution or any kind of, you know, relief for people. Because you're certainly not curing anything, but you're even providing a decent soundtrack is something to be proud of, right?
Absolutely. And Ginger, I've got to take a moment here to thank you again for talking with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Brilliant. This has been lovely fun. Thank you very, very much.
Oh, man, thank you too. And we're going to take a listen now to this track, You Will Let Me Down Again. It's off your album, The Pessimist Companion, here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. That was Ginger Wildheart with You Will Let Me Down Again off his solo album, The Pessimist Companion, reissued now and available from Wicked Cool Records. I'm the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to Ginger for speaking with me today. Thanks as well to Sammy Semenza for producing our podcast. Next time around, we'll check in with Detroit area singer-songwriter Nick Punti of Nick Punti and the Complicated Men. They've got a new album out now on Gem Records called Heart Inside Your Head, and we'll find out all about it on your next Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage. And I will take it on the chin.
As a child, Otha Ellis Bates McDaniel taught himself to play guitar, but he never found one he liked, so he built his own. Soon after, his rectangular-shaped axe with an old TV dial for a volume knob could be heard on radios everywhere as he launched the beat heard round the world. He was Bo Diddley. His handmade guitar is at the Hard Rock Cafe, Times Square. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history are at Hard Rock Cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com. Don't let it slide, baby, diamond ring.